Hello, my Cavalier fan friends. It is I, Bob Schmidt. We will delay not at all, because I think you all know how this podcast has to begin. It's a song which needed to be dusted off. We have not used it in some time, but I knew when I made it way back when that there was something deep inside that Midwestern man, a certain swagger, when given extended run, and tonight it was on full display. This is the Fear the Fro podcast. Welcome to the Drippy Dean Wade Pod.
Dean Wade, he's not an impressive physically specimen guy.
How dare you?
Hey! Knocks it down.
You got the drip. Dean Wade's the drippiest Dean. He's the drippiest damn small forward you've ever seen. He got that drip. And he's a scoring machine. The 3-and-D undrafted free agent development dream. His name is Drip.
Drip! Drip! Dean Wade, holy shit. Holy shit, guys. I want you to take a journey over to Twitter at Fear the Fro Pod and witness for yourself the evolution of despair. Fucking make a basket, Evan. To hope. Well, we're down by 10 and we're shooting horribly. I mean, I guess. To elation. Oh, fuck you, Tatum. You leg-kicking bitch. As Dean Wade became the first pleasant-looking white man that Boston didn't immediately put onto a pedestal as he ripped their fucking hearts out. My wife isn't here right now. She's out having a mocktail. That's what she said. She's pregnant. One, I don't know if she's telling the truth. She seemed pretty pissed at me last night. I'm not gonna lie. I went to bed at 1:30 because I was taping the podcast. And anyone who also has a podcast, which is seemingly everyone, knows that when you upload it to Apple, it takes a fucking eternity. But then I got to that dangerous portion of the evening. If it's after 12:30, I have a policy here in the Schmidt home. If I make it past midnight, I have a very real, very serious decision to make. Do I abandon my wife to sleep in the guest bedroom? Because she's pregnant. She wakes up a lot. I want her to get a restful night's sleep. She had to be up at 6 a.m. Or do I go in there, wake her up, knowing I'm going to get a speech about how too little sleep leads to Alzheimer's and you'll also get fat because your body needs recovery? True story. That's what's coming. It's sort of a lose-lose in the form of guilt trips. It's either a you abandoned your wife guilt trip or your body's breaking down and you're probably going to die before me guilt trip. But nothing is going to bring me down tonight. Outside of perhaps an untimely demise as I tie a rope around my neck while watching Dean Wade highlights furiously wanking, at which point I accidentally die. Which won't happen, but I'm just saying, if my wife is listening to this podcast, understand it could be worse. At least I come to bed, period. But I'm sorry, this is not good podcasting, what I'm doing right now. We should be talking about the game, so let's do that. We came in shorthanded. Anybody who listened to the last pod with Jordan Zer, which I think you will enjoy. If you haven't listened, I know, I see my numbers. Nobody listens after a loss. But I will say, I think a lot of the things we discussed in the podcast proved to be prophetic. When I'm not unique, this isn't some special, you know, I'm the truth-sayer type podcast. It isn't. All of us wanted Dean Wade to get more of an opportunity. All of us wanted Sam Merrill to get more of an opportunity. I think many of us were frustrated due to whatever you want to call it. The injuries, stacking on top of more injuries, we got extended minutes from every single player who I think Cavalier fans wanted to see. We got a Sam Merrill start. Just look at these minute totals. Now, Evan Mobley, let's not mince words, he fucking stunk. Evan tried to play through Kristaps Porzingis, tried to play through Luke Kornet, and it did not go his way. Not at all. When you hear this on the television,
Mobley rejected.
39-21 this season. Mobley challenging Porzingis. Mobley stripped of the ball.
When you hear those sounds coming, you don't even need the video footage. When you hear Evan wailing like that through the courtside microphones, you know things aren't going well. Your eyeballs could have fallen out. I know I'm reusing the drip sound effects, but it kind of sounds like eyeballs popping out, right? You could have witnessed what Dean Wade did. Tuned in only in the fourth quarter, after Evan had left. Seen Dean Wade go on an absolute explosion, and your eyes could have said, well, nowhere to go but down,
and I'm out of here.
And still, your ears alone could tell you that Evan was struggling. I have not seen a worse Evan performance since that game back in late 2021 where Al Horford dog-walked him into an 0-for-11 performance, a game in which the only point Evans scored was at the foul line. But fuck this negativity, man, because Evans' injury actually led to something which we would not have witnessed had it not been for the bad that led to the good. We get the doors kicked in by 20, 30 points, and Evan Mobley's a complete no-show. He's going to get roughed up, but some of that's going to get lost in the shuffle. Not everyone. There'll be people who want to talk about Evans plus-minus, despite the fact that an undrafted player outscored the entire Boston Celtics team by himself in the fourth quarter.
Let's ignore that part so I can discuss metrics.
I mean, we know how Wendy feels.
He's not an impressive physically specimen guy.
Now, I'm kidding with the Wendy clip. Wendy is pro-Dean. That's just a weird turn of phrase that I've had in my back pocket for no apparent reason. Honestly, Dean Wade, I would gladly pay him $6 million just for this game for this season. He could be injured. He could be tied Jerome-ing it the rest of the way. Tonight brought me his $6 million salary worth of joy. I feel like we got a return on investment just based on the result tonight. Now, Wendy is correct. Dean may not be a flashy athlete, but he certainly had a flashy dunk tonight. Here's the thing, though. You can't measure one thing with a vertical jump. Dan Patrick, would you like to let him know?
Dean's penis.
That's right. It's Dean's penis. You may be asking yourself, how did I get Dan Patrick to say Dean's penis? You may be thinking it's a deep fake. No, he went to a bar called Big Dean's, and then he said the word penis one time. I have sat on that drop 17 months waiting for a night like tonight. Tonight isn't just the culmination of years of dedication that Dean has shown to the art of basketball that has led to this evening. It is the culmination of my efforts to get a conversation about Dean's penis into the podcast. And then to watch that podcast reach triple-digit reviews on Spotify. We're at 98. We're going over 100 with this. This may be the second or first most listened to episode this season. Max Strus set the record last week. I think Dean's going to break it today. Today,
Dean's penis
is officially mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
The stretch fours went deep. Dean Wade got 21 minutes, 12 of which came consecutively in the fourth quarter. He went end zone to end zone, and my, did he do it magically. But before, we're not going to talk a lot about Nyang in this, but in his 26 minutes, he was fairly serviceable. Second on the team in plus minus, only to the drippy one. Three triples in four shots. That is a positive George Nyang experience. And we got to see them on the floor alongside one another. That almost never happens. And if I told you there would be a critical fourth quarter possession that turned into a Dean Wade, George Nyang pick and roll where Dean flushed on Kristaps Porzingis, I would think that you were playing 2K. That doesn't sound like an actual play that we're executing with the 2023-2024 Cavs. And yet, here we are. It worked magically. When Evan Mobley left the game, I snarkily said something to the effect of, well, at least his plus minus isn't going to suffer, because we proceeded to let the Celtics go on a pretty devastating run in the third quarter that made it seem like, okay, the competitive portion of this game is done. Evan checked out at 5 minutes. We were down by seven. By the end of the quarter, we were trailing by 16 points, which ballooned to 22 points after the first 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. So we were unraveling. But that is what makes the fourth quarter so magical. These are the games we need to hang on to when we lose faith in people. Because just a game ago, Dean Wade and George Nyang combined to go 0 for 10. We were not in a good place with the quote-unquote stretch fours, even Evan Mobley. I mean, you could say the entire power forward position was being looked at under a microscope. In the fourth quarter tonight, a quarter in which they both played the entirety of the quarter, 12 minutes each for Dean and George, and they went 9 for 9 and 7 for 7 from outside the arc. From nothing to everything. Their 9 shots, 26 points. Jason Tatum's 9 fourth quarter shots, 2 points. This wasn't a quarter where Darius or Jarrett saved us. In fact, they only scored 3 of the 34 points that the Cavaliers scored in that fourth quarter to double up the Celtics. Look at the leading minutes. Caris LeVert, Dean Wade, George Niang, Sam Merrill, Isaac Okoro. Those were the five Cavaliers who were on the floor the most. A lot of that can be attributed to the fact that JB would let the depth play when he found us down 22 points with 9 minutes left. Now, is there anything more poetic than the guy from Kansas showing out on bobblehead night for Jason and Travis Kelce as they go nuts, hyping up the crowd during that run? Dean actually talked about how cool that was in his post-game press conference, as did Jared.
It looked like Dean was rebounding every single basketball, honestly, you know, and that's not just me hyping him up. That's actually what I saw. And it's like, okay, we can get into it. And then honestly, once the Kelce brothers started hyping up the crowd, it's like, oh, we can do this. And, you know, the whole crowd got into it. You could feel just a whole momentum shift.
In Dean's press conference, they asked him about what it felt like from his perspective. And he brought out some of the things you've heard other guys say about, well, the rim felt like a swimming pool. But I thought it was cool hearing him describe how confident he was in the moment and even pre-anticipating what he would do if Darius gave him the ball in certain spots.
Your mind's like quiet. It's just quiet. And the rim looks huge. You know, I think I hit a three and they called timeout. But that whole time running down the floor, I was like, if DG flips this back to me, no matter where I'm at on this court, it's going up. And, you know, I just hit a couple before that. And so my confidence, you know, I was hot. And obviously DG dropped it behind him. And, you know, the rim looked like a swimming pool. So that helps.
Now, there's one more Dean clip I want to play you. It's about what was the pivotal offensive basket in the game. After closing that 22-point deficit, it only took them 6 minutes. By just over 3 minutes left in the fourth, the Cavaliers had tied it up. And they were leading with a minute and a half left by four. But after an and one, the Cavs found themselves down by one with roughly 40 seconds left. Now, you know the play. Dean Wade cleaned up a miss from Darius Garland. But what's incredible in watching that play, had it gone differently, Darius Garland had Kristaps Porzingis on his left hip. Jaylen was waiting in front of him at the rim. And so he tried to split the two and go into the middle of the lane, which left Kristaps in a pretty good position to stuff him. Somehow, though, he got the ball high up off the backboard. If that was a layup attempt, thank God Dean did what he did. Because if Darius missed everything and it resulted in a loss from the Cavaliers, much like Evan would have taken some strays, Darius probably would have taken some strays. Because people would have witnessed that historic fourth quarter by Dean and felt like we went back to our core four. And for the second night in a row, the final play execution left something to be desired. Against the Knicks, it was the turnover. In this game, had we not gotten that offensive rebound, how devastated would you have been watching Darius give Kristaps an and one? Which, again, I don't blame him for getting scored on by Kristaps Porzingis, but up by two, you either need to concede the basket or be in a position where your foul will prevent him from getting a shot off. You cannot commit a foul and do so weakly enough that he can go up through it and finish. And that's exactly what happened. The foul, in addition to the bucket, was what gave Boston the one-point lead. And if the game ended with him missing an attempted end-of-the-game layup badly, I don't envy what would have came after that. Dean made an incredible read, and he described it in detail in the post game.
You know, those big shots in games, a lot of people, you know, on the defensive end, you know, I caught myself doing it a couple times, but they take that last shot and everyone just turns their head and looks, and it's a perfect time to go get an offensive rebound. That's what I was thinking. And he missed it, and it luckily came off the front of the rim, and it was an easy putback. But, you know, it was just all those little things. I was just trying to get out there, run the floor as hard as I could, going for all the offensive rebounds. And then on defense, you know, everyone relies on each other on defense, and I didn't want to be the person to let them down. That's my whole mindset.
Dean Wade should get a special thank you from Darius, because he went from potentially two very bad plays, had Dean not gotten that offensive rebound, to a huge, awesome defensive effort against a much bigger Jason Tatum, where he cleanly contested and forced Jason Tatum, or Jason just conceded, and took a fadeaway jumper to try to win the game. Now, initially, they called it a foul. They overturned it. Jason kicked his leg out. There wasn't any real contact. It was the correct call. I haven't even bothered to look. I did listen to Jason Tatum in the post-game press conference.
Thought I got fouled, but they didn't think I got fouled. And it's tough because we would have had to tip in. So it's just a weird way to end the game. But, You know, they always say the game isn't won or lost on the last play. It's a lot of things that we didn't do well.
No, I didn't really have any issue with that answer. I mean, I know there's Cavs fans who would want him to say, there was a correct call, it wasn't a foul, but he's not going to sit here. He's not trying to just take it on the chin for 15 minutes of questions, because he got a lot of questions about how quickly he got into the final shot. I know the fan base gets on him about being so big and taking a fadeaway, especially over a guy as diminutive as Darius Garland. But maybe the reason he was just slightly defensive is because of the person asking him the questions. That's right. It wasn't until this moment in the post-game press conference that I realized a certain enemy of the pod was in attendance. Listen to this.
Are you trying to get into something sooner than how it played out that way, or is it just sort of what you got Darius on you were trying to get clean luck at that point?
Tim Bontemps was in attendance. Unfortunately, he witnessed that Evan Mobley game. I think it's fairly safe to say that he will not be overlooking that when making his assessments about the Cavaliers. And the fact that we closed a 22-point deficit with a lineup where oftentimes George Yang was the de facto center probably doesn't bode well for his belief in the too big lineup. But that's a problem for another day. I will gladly take this type of victory over whatever my bullshit agendas are, day after day after day. There's probably some of me getting high off my own supply here, but this game felt meaningful to me, like it may be exactly what we needed to break out of this funk that we've been in as of late. Just a day ago, I was complaining about the late game decision making of Darius Garland, and in a game that I don't know what the odds were, but just look at the, you know, they have that graph that indicates the percentage chances of winning. With 6 minutes left in the fourth, the Celtics still had a 97% chance. It flipped instantaneously. 22 points to the Boston Celtics without Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, Evan Mobley. That should not be a game you win. The Celtics were healthy. The Celtics were riding high. The Celtics were coming off a game they won by 50. We talked about it yesterday, the probability of winning with different three-point percentages. Well, they're 37-2 coming into tonight when they've shot better than 35% from three-point range. They shot 39.5%. So they're now 37-3. But the fourth quarter, especially, for them to be 0 for 8 and for us to be 8 for 11, that has got to be crushing. And talk about a cruel turn. Just a game ago, the Warriors were the ones on their heels having to ask about their stupid game plan and getting the doors kicked in. And then just a game later, after a 50-point win, the Celtics are being asked to explain how they could give up a 22-point lead to a skeleton crew playing their second unit with 9 minutes left in a game. And they didn't give it up in 9 minutes. They gave it up in 6 minutes. The NBA is wild in that way. The difference between how I felt yesterday and how I felt today could not be further apart. It's like Dean Wade's stomach to the tip of his huge Midwestern hog. It's just a massive chasm of space.
Dean's penis.
This game feels like the kind of game that can galvanize a team, that can serve as a launching point to turn momentum back in our favor. Now, I don't want to make conclusions about lineups, really, based off tonight, because tonight is peak Dean. It's a career night. I'm not going to use that to bludgeon what was otherwise a very good showing by George Yang. But what I do think we can take away from tonight is that we saw a lot of very unconventional pairings and lineups. Yang and Wade alongside one another, playing effective stretches in that comeback. We saw small lineups with CPJ, with Merrill, with Caris LeVert, with George Yang alongside Mobley, where effectively there, Caris LeVert was your biggest of the wings. And that's what I want people to kind of focus on. There's been so much discussion, especially around Fedor and this idea of conventional positions, and we can't play Merrill more because if Yang loses minutes, then it's got to be a four. We need to abandon that. We have only a few guys on this roster who are locked into one position. Jared Allen is a center. Craig Porter Jr. is a point guard. Tristan Thompson, almost everybody else can play multiple positions. Darius and Donovan are both combo guards. Dean Wade, George Yang, they can go 3 to 4 comfortably, 3 to 5 if you need them to. We've got three wings at least who I'm fine with playing the two to the four. Max Strus, Caris LeVert, and Isaac Okoro. As need dictates, or as hot shooting dictates, that you have to slide one of those guys over the four to get more shooting on the floor. I am fine with that. Responding to what is happening on the floor is far more important than any definition of what position guys line up at. Just look at Boston. Jared Allen pointed it out in the postgame. He talked about Boston's scheme being one where positions are somewhat irrelevant defensively.
It's just how they play. They have a very unique style of playing basketball. You know, they don't put the five on the five. They don't put the four on the four. You know, sometimes Derek White was on me. Sometimes Porzingis was on me. So at that point for me, it was just trying to find the right matchup.
Now, I understand that Jared's talking about defense there. And Boston having such strong individual defenders, of course they're going to be positionally versatile. I think we're that way, though, oftentimes offensively. We have multiple guys who can do multiple things. Caris, Max, they can all shoot, create off ball, put the ball on the floor a little. They're pretty rugged defenders. They may not be great defenders, but they're definitely fundamentally sound, try-hard defenders. Isaac is strong for his diminutive size. I think we're more versatile there than people give us credit for, especially when flanked by a back line of Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, or both at times. But sharp turn here. We need to table this because I wasn't done with the Dean talk. I just get off on these side quests. Here's the thing. Dean's 20 points in the fourth quarter where he was 7-for-7 and 5-for-5 outside the arc. Does that sound familiar to you? Because it should. We just experienced this, not two podcasts, one calendar week ago. We are reliving history. Just days ago, February 28th, Max Strus, 5-for-5 from outside the arc, including that bomb that won us the game against Dallas we probably should have dropped. When that happened, Max joined six other men who had made at least 5 3-pointers without a miss in a quarter this season. Those other six men were all teammates. Keegan Murray, Malik Monk, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Jalen Brunson, Bojan Bogdanovic with the Knicks, not in his Detroit Pistons iteration. This is a direct quote from the tweet that I put up February 28th. Feels like another Cavalier is destined to join Max. Well, well, well. What do we have here? Two Cavaliers now have made 5 3-pointers without a miss in a quarter. And again, I pointed it out then. I will reiterate it now. Our Cavaliers did that in the fourth quarter. None of those other six men had that kind of efficient outburst in the final quarter. Now, all eight of them won, so I guess it doesn't really matter if the result is a victory. But I do think it's pretty cool that both Cavaliers had their perfect three-point shooting explosions in the final quarter of the game. And I can absolutely guarantee you, without doing an ounce of research to support this, that none of those victories required a 22-point comeback with 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Cavs have never come back from a fourth-quarter deficit this big. They've never come back from a fourth-quarter deficit larger than 20. It just has not happened. So combine everything we've spoke of here. An undrafted bench player has a career night against the best team in the Eastern Conference on an 11-game winning streak. In a fourth quarter where the defense holds an all-NBA talent to 1-of-9 shooting, and your starting point guard manages to get a season high in assists despite the fact that everybody not named Jared Allen shot 9-for-41 in the first half. To put a big fat bow on it. I said big fat bow, Dean. Jesus, put it away. And to put a big fat bow on it, the New York Knicks fell to the Atlanta Hawks, sliding to the fifth seed, giving the Orlando Magic temporary home court advantage in a potential first-round playoff matchup. Things were bleak on Monday. Things look much better on Tuesday. Now, don't lay an egg against the Atlanta Hawks. Let's keep this momentum going. Dean Wade Truthers, today is your day. Gabe Barton, the only mutual I have who's also a Kansas State alum, today is your day. Swifties. Travis Kelce shows up. We get to witness history. This is a win for everyone involved. So I leave you the same way I came in. First of all, pandering for a 5-star review on your platform of choice. But please, maybe pop onto Spotify. Push me over that 100. It has been far too long since I got to use this thing. Good night, Cavalier fans. I love you all.
Dean Wade, he's not an impressive physically specimen guy.
How dare you?
He knocks it down.
You got the drip. Dean Wade's the drippiest Dean. He's the drippiest damn small forward you've ever seen. He got that drip. And he's a scoring machine. The 3-and-D undrafted free agent development dream. His name is Drip.